Hello, and welcome to the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast. I'm Carl from selfsufficienthub.com, and I'm here to talk about all things self-sufficiency. Sustainability and food security matters. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 159 of the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast. I hope you're all safe and well. Today, we're going to be talking about guerrilla gardening and what that means and the benefits that it might have, the opportunities it raises, how you might want to get into it and go about it. So before we get into that, I've just got a very quick sort of announcement slash request. Particularly at this time of year, I'm aware that I'm doing quite a lot of seasonal content. I'm doing a lot of stuff aimed at spring, especially in the coming weeks. And I'm also aware, with a global audience, not everyone is in the same climate or time of year in their growing cycle as I am. So I thought it might be nice if periodically, I sort of direct people that might be in the Southern Hemisphere back to the relevant podcast that's sort of seasonal for that time of year. So when we are in spring, obviously you guys listening from down under will be in autumn. And I just wanted someone with a little bit of knowledge just to get in touch and confirm with me sort of when your season starts, because I've got it in my head that it would probably be around September, October. And I just want someone to confirm that, really, that, you know, my February would be your August, February being the coldest generally month of the year, but the last of the really, really cold months. So, yeah, just drop me an email or hit me up in any way you see fit. And if you can sort of link me, is it exactly 6 months out of cycle that we are from each other? Or is there something else I'm not thinking about that I need to take into account? So yeah, let me know. But that's all I had to get out the way today, the only bit of housekeeping. So we'll get into today's episode on guerrilla gardening. Now, we're going to go into all sorts of stuff on the subject. And the first thing to say is that, depending on your definition, a lot of the definitions will basically say that guerrilla gardening is gardening somewhere you are not legally allowed to. So, first of all, if you decide to do anything of that nature, then obviously check out the repercussions, make sure that you know what you're getting into, etc., etc. But we're not really talking about breaking into somewhere you're not allowed, and we're not talking about doing any harm, and we're not talking about doing anything that would be perceived as anything other than a positive thing, or at least that's how I see it. We are going to talk a little bit about what it means and land rights and things like that, but I don't think we're going to get too deep into the weeds on that, because it's going to very much depend on your situation. But the idea of guerrilla gardening, well, I'll read just the opening paragraph or two from what it says on Wikipedia. I think that's as good a place to start as any. So Wikipedia says the following: guerrilla gardening is the act of gardening on land that gardeners do not have the legal rights to cultivate, such as abandoned sites, areas that are not being cared for, or private property. It encompasses a diverse range of people and motivations, ranging from gardeners who spill over their legal boundaries to gardeners with political influences who seek to provoke change, using guerrilla gardening as a form of protest or direct action. This practice has implications for land rights and land reform, aiming to promote reconsideration of land ownership in order to assign a new purpose or reclaim land that is perceived to be in neglect or misused. So when I think of guerrilla gardening, I think of it as just an opportunity to maybe enrich an area and produce some, in my, you know, for me, because everything I grow is all about producing food, I'm personally not as tied up in the production of flowers as I am in the production of food. So, you know, that's where my passion lies. And I think of things like scattering some asparagus seeds on a patch of, well, scrubland, you know, somewhere on a public footpath where it's not particularly well maintained. You're not going to have to worry about someone coming along with a lawnmower every week in the summer. And imagine the idea of just scattering some asparagus seeds there, and then in years to come being able to sort of forage for your own asparagus and know where it is. That's the kind of thing that excites me. But we're going to talk about all the different varieties, and we're going to go through some examples. So Wikipedia goes on to say that the land that is gorilla gardened is usually abandoned or perceived to be neglected by its legal owner. That land is used by gorilla gardeners to raise plants, frequently focusing on food crops or plants intended for aesthetic purposes like flowers. Some gorilla gardens carry out their actions at night, in relative secrecy, to sow and tend a new vegetable patch or flower garden in an effort to make the area of use and or more attractive. Some garden at more visible hours for the purpose of publicity, which can be seen as a form of activism. So I'm not really going to get too much into the activism side of things today, but I just want to talk about the idea of guerrilla gardening and of taking something that is neglected. And, you know, particularly if you live in a flat and you don't have any outside space, this could be a real outlet for you, not only to express your creativity and be a gardener, but also to possibly create something that you can harvest down the line.
You can find Self-Sufficient Hub content elsewhere online in lots of other places. We have a YouTube channel, we also have our website, and now there's our Facebook page and Facebook group. Links to all of these you can find in the show notes. Come check us out.
So one of the best ways, I think, to explore this topic is to explore some examples of it. One of the most famous movements within the guerrilla gardening movement is the International Sunflower Guerrilla Gardening Day, which is something that happens on the 1st of May every year. And it's an annual event. As I said, it happens every year and it happens all around the world. And basically the idea is that you go out and you plant sunflowers somewhere near where you live, typically in a public place, somewhere that you perceive to be neglected, maybe around a pit of a tree or flower beds and roadside verges that aren't really sort of taken care of. It's happened since 2007, and it was started by a group of guerrilla gardeners based in Brussels. And off the back of this, they got the name the Brussels Farmers. And it's been, declared a National Sunflower Guerrilla Gardening Day ever since. It's been championed by guerrilla gardeners all around the world. And we're going to get into one of those champions a bit later in the episode. And there is one particular online resource that I will steer you towards, which I think is sort of the hub for all things guerrilla gardening. But participation in this, in the Guerrilla Gardening Sunflower Day, has grown every year since it started. Now, not everywhere around the world is going to be in the season on the 1st of May to be planting sunflowers, or perhaps they live somewhere that sunflowers aren't really an option. But elsewhere, people have used this day and partaken in this event by planting something else that is appropriate to the season. So that's one example that began in Brussels and basically made itself around the world and happens every year. There are some other, lots and lots of other really notable examples. In fact, on the Wikipedia page that I read the opening for this episode from, you'll find lots of examples that are really fantastic and really worth looking into. So a couple of examples from North America next. And the first one is Adam Purple's Garden of Eden. And this one began in the 1970s, and it was in the Lower East Side of Manhattan in America. Now, Adam Purple, who is the chap's name, he created a circular garden and tended to it for quite some time. And he created it really is a beautiful design. If you have a look at it online, just Google Adam Purple's garden or so anything like that, and you'll find the results. And he shaped it like the yin and yang symbol. And it was basically made from an abandoned lot, an abandoned bit of ground in the middle of a city. And in 1986, it was bulldozed by the city of New York. But by that time, the garden had overtaken many, many lots, and it had reached a size of 15,000 square feet. There is a short film that's been made of this garden called Adam Purple and the Garden of Eden. And I do recommend that you dig that out and have a look. It's just a fantastic thing. It's a fantastic example of someone taking something that has been abandoned and left derelict and turning it into something absolutely amazing and fantastic. So that's the first example from the northern United States. The next one is from Utah, and this is an example I really, really love because this is more in line with how I see guerrilla gardening. This is definitely something that I would promote and that I would do myself. So in northern Utah, along the banks of the canals there, it's really, really common to find lots of apple trees and asparagus. And the asparagus would grow along the smaller ditch banks near the canals. And the reason for that is because 150 years ago, the workers who dug those canals would surreptitiously plant their apple cores deliberately to grow apple trees, and they would surreptitiously sling seeds of asparagus. The idea being, of course, that these things would be spread along the new ditch bank and would eventually turn into food down the line. And I just love that idea because for me, you know, there is a lot to be said for the political impact you can have. And if you want to create a movement, particularly around if there's a certain space that you feel is neglected and really needs attention, then of course you can use the tactic of guerrilla gardening to achieve, you know, raising awareness of that area. But this is much less political, and this is just a bit of doing your bit to spread the seeds of something amazing and edible, and just for the sake of it growing there in years to come. And of course, the idea of planting apple seeds in apple cores, it wasn't because these guys were hoping to come back and harvest the apples anytime soon. You know, this is a real thing about looking after the future today rather than really, really worrying about, you know, just taking care of the immediate future. And I love that. And I'm assuming that a lot of the guys that worked on these projects probably weren't anticipating being in that area by the time that these trees or, you know, asparagus, you're talking two really long-term plants. By the time they were in fruition, there's a really good chance that the people who were doing this would have known that they probably wouldn't even be in that area. So I just think that is a fantastic example. And it's the sort of thing that I personally would condone and say, get on with it. You know, I don't see a downside there. So that's the first couple of examples, but the examples aren't limited to the United States by any stretch of the imagination.
You can now support the show directly. Just go to patreon.com/selfsufficienthub. You can become a patron and set up to donate to the show from any amount. Pledging as little as $3 a month makes a huge difference. If that's not your thing, you can also support the show by sharing it with people you know or posting about it on social media. We really appreciate all the help that you give us. It's people like you that make this show possible.
So next up, we've got an example from Europe and specifically Denmark. This one took place in 1996, and it's a huge contrast to the two that we have previously discussed. This one was far more organized, and it was made by a Danish group called the Danish Organic Starters. In my notes, the information that I got on this particular garden, it contains a lot of Danish terms. So please forgive my pronunciation. I know I have some Danish speakers who listen to the show. But the garden in a night is something, and the Danish words, to me, it says half par a net. but I'm not sure about the pronunciation of that. And that's Garden in a Night. And it was basically an empty piece of land right in the middle of a city in Copenhagen or near Copenhagen called Guldbergsgade. And again, forgive my pronunciation. And it's in Denmark, as I said, and it was transformed into a garden in one night with about 1,000 people. So as I said, this was massively organized in advance, and they had everything from the manpower to the materials all preemptively in place. And in one night, they took a piece of, you know, abandoned land and turned it into a beautiful garden. The examples go on. So staying in Europe now, we're going to talk about a chap called Richard Reynolds, and we'll get onto his blog in a little bit more detail in the next segment. But his blog is called guerrillagardening.org, and I think it is really the resource online if you're interested in guerrilla gardening and you want to look a little bit closer. He started his blog as a solo guerrilla gardener, doing it just outside his council block in London, in his, you know, block of council houses in London, in Elephant and Castle. And at the time, he was just simply a gardener who was really frustrated at what he was seeing at the empty spaces around his neighbourhood, and he wanted to beautify them. But he started blogging about what he was doing, and this blog started to attract the interest of other guerrilla gardeners, and it really started to create a movement. And it also caught the attention of the world's media, and things kind of snowballed and it grew from there. And it led to today, the guerrillagardening.org, which, as I say, started as Richard Reynolds' blog, has become the hub online, I think, for this type of thing. His guerrilla gardening has reached now many, many places in South London, and it's inspired lots of others around the world to get involved. And there's tips and tricks of how to get involved included on his blog. He also works alongside lots of other groups, some local and some not so local, some he travels to. And he's guerrilla gardened not only all around London, but he's also travelled abroad and done guerrilla gardening in Berlin, Montreal, and even Libya. So it's still a blog. The website guerrillagardening.org is still a blog, but it includes a lot more, including, you know, a huge online community now where guerrilla gardeners from all around the world can get in touch with each other and find support. He's released a book on guerrilla gardening. That's the title of the book, on guerrilla gardening, and that describes all of the sort of things he's been doing and the activities that are happening all around the world. And that was published in 2008, although it didn't make it outside of England until a little bit later. But he often gives talks on the subject, and also we're going to quote from him a little bit later from an interview he gave to the London Evening Standard, which is the London newspaper. The final example I have is from Australia, and one of the reasons I wanted to include this example is because I think it just illustrates, you know, we've talked about lots of different examples, and you can see that there are a vast array of different types of guerrilla gardening and a different type of ethos and a different type of culture, and how it changes from the people planting asparagus seeds in Utah to, you know, people building a garden in a night in Denmark, and all the different things we've discussed, how they're different all around the world. Well, in Melbourne, particularly in Australia, guerrilla gardening is a fairly prominent activity, and most of the inner northern suburbs have communal vegetable gardens. And there's also lots of land that adjoin rail lines and areas like that that have undergone a lot of regenerative work with using native vegetation, but also using lots and lots of food crops. So there are a few minor disputes in Melbourne around the idea of guerrilla gardening. Basically, with two separate groups forming. You know, there are those who are concerned mostly with using native plants and those who are mostly concerned with growing communal food. Now, these two differing opinions still work together without dispute on most cases, but it's just interesting that they've fallen into two very different camps. There are small community groups around Australia called Permablitz, and they will quite regularly gather and construct and design suburban gardens for free. And the purpose of these efforts are to basically educate people on how they can grow their own food and how they can be prepared against food prices changing or food becoming unavailable. So there's even a show in Australia on Network 10 called Guerrilla Gardeners, and that featured a team of gardeners who basically would go to areas that were owned by councils and local authorities and would garden them without the owners knowing. So this is something that is really worldwide and across the world, but even within countries, you know, there's lots of different ways you can take it. There are no rules for guerrilla gardening. I suppose that's the point, you know? You're the gorilla.
It's really easy for you to get in touch with us. You can do it either by sending an email to selfsufficientcontact@gmail.com or by using the link in the show notes to send us a voice message. You can send us a voice message just using your phone. You could also reach out to us on Facebook, where we have the Self-Sufficient Hub group and the Self-Sufficient Hub page. We're always thrilled to get your feedback, questions, or suggestions for future topics on the show.
So while it can sound, you know, radical or dangerous, it doesn't have to be an overtly political or polarizing thing to do. You know, it's really quite a simple idea. It can be either just to transform some unused land into something beautiful, or it can be to try and grow some food somewhere that is otherwise going to waste. And this is happening all over the world. Now, history is full of people trying to be ever more resourceful in ways to grow food or to, you know, do their bit and change the environment around them. And guerrilla gardeners are no different. So whether we're talking about planting the, you know, abandoned areas at the side of pavements and places like that, roundabouts with some seed bombs of flowers or whatever it might be, or whether it's trying to find somewhere that you can plant some edible perennials that you'll be able to harvest in years to come, it's something that everyone can do. And strictly speaking, sometimes the sort of things that I'm talking about obviously are technically illegal, but they're not the sort of thing that neighbors tend to call the police about when they come across it. And I think for me, one of the biggest points to sort of think about is the overall experience and whether what we're doing is definitely for the good, for the greater good or not. So I think so long as what you're doing is adding a benefit to the area, then and it's a benefit that everyone would agree with, then I can't really see what the downside is. You know, more green space is always a good thing, particularly if you're in urban areas where it's, you know, crowded and quite often concrete everywhere you look. So not only can a guerrilla gardener provide some mental benefits and the beautification of a city, but they can also strengthen a sense of community if you get other people involved as well. So going back to guerrillagardening.org, it's really the place that I would signpost you to if you are interested in learning any more about this topic, because everything is there. Whether you want to sign up to an email list and join a group, or whether you want to just get tips on what to do and how to do it. But there is a page on guerrillagardening.org that is called Tips, and we're just going to very briefly run through them now. So if it is something that you are into, then here is the few tips that you can find on that website, basically. But number one is to find some local orphaned land, obviously. And they suggest that, you know, this land should be fairly near to your home, because the idea is that you're going to tend it. You know, when you first plant it, you might need to go and water it. So the exact wording on the website is, you'll be amazed how many little grubby patches of unloved public space there are. Neglected flower beds, concrete planters, sprouting litter and untamed plants, bare plots of mud. Choose one that's close to home. Perhaps you pass it on the way to the shops or work and appoint yourself its parent. Now, they go on to talk in a little bit more depth, but point number two, or tip number two, is to plan a mission. Make a date in the diary for an evening attack when troublemaking busybodies are out of sight. Invite supportive friends, or perhaps enroll supportive strangers by announcing your attack on the guerrilla gardening community. And then there's a link. Number three is to find a local supply of plants. The cheaper, the better. Number four is to choose your plants. Now, I like this because there's no point in wasting a lot of time in planting some plants that aren't going to make it. So the suggestion is to think hardy, resistant to water shortages and the cold, and in some locations, even the foot traffic of pedestrians. These plants need to look after themselves a lot of the time. Then it says, think impactful, colour, evergreen, foliage, scale. These plants need to really make a difference for as much of the year as possible. Visit the community to get advice about specific plants for your part of the world. The next thing is, it talks a little bit about footwear. And then point number six is, bring some bags. And I think this is quite important if you're going to take part in the, you know, the more visible side of guerrilla gardening, is plastic bags and bin liners. Not only can they keep your feet clean, but they are essential for clearing up the detritus of war, be that weeds, litter, flower pots and pebbles. They need to be carried away. For gentle work, rescue windblown carrier bags. For more serious gardening, reuse compost bags or giant sacks from the builders merchants. Number seven is regular watering. Tip number seven. So one of the responsibilities of a guerrilla gardening is ongoing tending. Water is in short supply in many parts of the world, and even drizzly old London, the guerrilla gardener must usually carry water. Tip number eight is seed bombs. So if you're gardening areas where access is difficult or a long dig is unsuitable, use a seed bomb, sometimes called green grenades. And there's loads of tips on the website, you know, how to make seed bombs and everything else that you might need. Tip number nine is what they call chemical warfare, and that is to boost your plants with natural chemicals. They're basically talking a little bit there about using compost or some kind of fertilizer. And then tip number 10 is to spread the word. Tip number 11 is to think about transportation. And then tip number 12, the final tip, is buy my book. And here the author, Richard Reynolds, is, you know, sending people a link to his book. And I have no qualms about that at all. I just think it's a really positive thing. So I will reiterate the disclaimer from the top of the show, and, you know, you must think about the legalities of what you're doing and the implications of what you're doing. But guerrilla gardening is something that I think there's the opportunity for most of us to embrace it in some way. And like I say, for me, it's more about just thinking of where we might be able to scatter some seeds for some lovely edible perennials for not only us, but for future generations to enjoy. And with that, I will say keep safe, and I will speak to you on Monday.
If you find this podcast valuable, there's several ways you can support it. The easiest of which is to rate and review it wherever you get your podcasts. You could also talk about it or share it wherever you post online, including your social media pages. And now you can support the podcast directly by becoming a patron at patreon.com/selfsufficienthub. However you support the podcast, we really appreciate it. Thank you for listening. See you soon.